And joining us right now at PMP Network is Andy Taylor. You know him, you love him, from Duran Duran. You know, it's funny, we had it advertised that Andy Taylor was coming on, and someone said, is that the guy from Andy Griffith's show? No, no, no. That's Sheriff Taylor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We haven't heard that one before, have we?
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. It's good to talk to you. Andy has written a very interesting book. It's called A Wild Boy, My Life in Duran Duran. And wow, oh wow. You know, we've all heard the stories about the rock and rollers and the wild times, and here they are right here in black and white.
Yeah, well, it's I think it covers the sort of, it covers quite a lot of ground and experience, and certainly, I mean, the basic premise of it is it's not about people's private life. It's about the private life of a band, what goes on underneath everything, and how you got there. And I certainly not wanting to get into the bean spilling business, I did an extensive amount of research to see what was in the public domain, what stories, and everything. Mainly the British press, God bless them, had been picked up by the media, and there's little stories here and there, some of them inaccurate, but pretty much everything that's in the book, in terms of, there's a few tales of getting drunk with Rod Stewart, but the stuff about the band, and you know, it had, a lot of it had been picked up, but it didn't make any sense, and you know, I could put things in good order.
Well, you did a nice job doing it, and it's also kind of a love story for your wife Tracy as well.
Well, you know, I've had an up and down. What people would look at it at a career and go, you know, you've had big curves in yours, because sometimes you do a lot and then sometimes you disappear, and you have these wonderful wilderness years where you're just, you know, yourself, and you can be, you know, a father and. And through all that at the time, because I did start very young, so by the time I got to my mid-20s, I'd ticked a lot of the things in the boxes of what I wanted to be from my teenage dream. So with that little bit of youth left, you're still not too old to, you know, to have a life. And I thought that was the whole point of it, if you did well in pop or rock, was that it'd give you a bit of an easier life, perhaps. So, you try to explain to people, you know, the whole passage and what, you know, how Duran Duran, how it got there, what happened as a consequence of some of the things, and why it, you know, has its own self-destruct mechanism.
Yeah, it's an interesting. The way you opened the book was interesting about the Live Aid concert, and. You know, how you guys had just got back together just for this, and the tension that was there, and the lack of excitement that should have been there, because you guys were just, it was a very interesting start to the book. It kind of got me right into it.
Well, what I wanted to do was set, that was the last gig we did together, so it was a poignant moment. It also sets the stage of just where we were at in terms of our career. And gives you the glory and the downer that, you know, most bands, the tales of most bands end up in tragedy, death, they split up, you know, there is no happy end to something, and Live Aid was really the beginning of the end. So you're trying to, like, you know, encapsulate that, the feeling of the day, which was still, wow, this is like never happened before, but cool, we're not very happy on our holidays.
Yeah,
it's like
exactly.
A family, you know, when families have to get together, Christmas, sometimes it's best that they don't, but you just got to. Well, that gig, we hadn't been together for a long, you know, we hadn't played together for over a year, so pulling it together was like that family Christmas that we best not have, you know. But then again, even despite all of that, of course, it was worth doing it, and you know, you remain kind of encapsulated, like in part of something that's become quite fundamental rock and roll history.
It was huge.
Bum notes as well.
Yeah, it was huge. Yeah, talking about huge, I mean, I was a big Duran Duran fan as well, Hungry Like the Wolf and all the great songs, and I guess one of the things that made you so big here in the United States had to be MTV. The videos that Duran Duran did were really, you know, way ahead of their time.
I know, we had that sort of duality of MTV, and then the radio airplay kicked in, and you had this kind of double exposure that, you know, we may have been the first, well, probably when we were the first British band, you may have been the first band that really benefited from zero to getting both this top 40 airplay and this huge exposure on MTV. And, you know, you used to have all the naysayers, you know, MTV, money for nothing, chicks for free. But, you know, it's like MTV stands for television, dude. And what you want to do when you're a kid is get on television. And you know, we would figured like, well, it's so powerful, this stuff. You get on TV when you make videos, but there's a station playing this stuff 24 hours a day. Now you think, how many times you're going to get on NBC, CBS, or any of the networks? Because that's all. There wasn't even really HBO then. But yeah. MTV play you all day. So we were like, well, let these old buggers like moan about it, and because we'll keep making videos. And you had that duality of radio and MTV, just loving it. And I think it really it made the pace of success that much more frenetic.
Yeah. You know, at one point after, and it's sad to see all this happen with all these big bands. We watched it with the Beatles when they imploded, and we watched it with you guys. But in actuality, when you guys split up, you formed two pretty good bands. I mean, you and John and Tony Thompson and Rob Palmer, you guys went together and formed Power Station, and Simon and Nick formed Arcadia, which did pretty well. So you guys were still...
Well, John and I stepped to one side and actually did it, put another band together. And the other lot just had a party in Paris. But that was the two sides of, you know, the band in the sense that both camps needed to move to one side, and the result was that both albums were platinum. So, you know, people say, well, what, you know, what happened? Well, in the space of 5 years, including the James Bond theme album, which was kind of orchestrated, and it still sold platinum. There were 7 platinum albums. Now, most bands, and we wrote everything, so after doing that amount of work, you know, it was, the train was absolute runaway pace, and no one puts the brakes on for you, so you got to do it yourself. And that's when Roger and I just jumped off,
yeah.
Got flung off at sort of 86. And, you know, if we had had the space for the break we needed, then undoubtedly things would have been different. It still may not have worked, but after giving so much in terms of input, that is the music business. It's like a blender. It's a non-stop blender, and artists just go in it.
Yeah.
They just keep coming out as mush, and you've got to keep your eyes open to what's going on around you. And I think that we were 23, 24 when we really started to see things and go, okay, yeah. So that's what you do when you're a kid, but now I've grown up a little bit. I understand what's going on here. And of course, I think that's the problem you see, particularly with like Britney Spears, who I've got a lot of, not sympathy for, but respect for, because growing up in public, goddamn, but taking control of your life, and when you get to a certain age, if you've been, you know, we were teenagers when we signed to EMI, obviously, you know, a lot easier to manipulate than when you're 24, 25.
Mm.
And that's, you try to take control, but of course it's very, very difficult to get, and the music business loves to divide and conquer. So if you can keep the singer off to one side and influence him, you know, they still do it now. These sad people in executive positions. And, you know, when you look back at it all, you think, we didn't even talk about that.
Yeah, they do that. They say, hey, you know, you don't need these guys. We can make you a star on your own.
Yeah, someone does all the talking for you.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. You know, I'm the book is a fascinating book, by the way. I got to just give it a plug again. It's Andy Taylor's book, Wild Boy, My Life in Duran Duran, and it's from Grand Central Publishers in Philly. It's a pretty heavy-duty book here. Yeah, it goes all over the place. I wanted to ask you about last year. I guess Duran Duran did an album, Massacre or something like that. You were not part of that, were you?
Red Carpet Massacre.
Yeah.
Self-professing philosophy, prophecy. I wasn't part of it. No, that was the album they did with Timbaland, and after we had sort of, well, we'd already delivered one album to Sony and a second album with a contract, and they had roundly rejected that. So there was a way to fix it, but that wasn't the way that things turned out. And, you know, it's just one of those things, you know, you look back and say, well, you can have regrets, but of course you can't. But I know where we went wrong now. But we nearly went right. And sometimes it is that fine line.
Yeah.
And we've been on the road for quite a while. We took something from nothing, you know, it was down on its knees beginning of 2000. We put it back together. And we got back to, you know, we sold out Madison Square Gardens. And again, when you're in your 40s. So we worked very hard, but you know, it's like the Wizard of Oz, and you just, which way do I go? And sometimes too many people go in the wrong direction. And, you know, Duran Duran, its whole relationship is a creative base. We got together creatively. We weren't friends initially. We became friends, but it was our creativity that brought us together.
Yeah.
So our creative relationship is what binds us, and if that's dodgy, then everything else starts to sort of fracture around it.
Yeah.
You can't outsource it, you know?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that fascinates me is when people like yourself become family people, and the part that of the family was very interesting to me. You had four children?
Yeah.
And how many of them are in the music biz now?
Well... one.
Is it Andy?
Thank God. Just yeah. My son's sing. He sings actually more than play. He plays guitar, but he's a singer.
Yeah.
So he's yeah.
Does he play with a band?
Yeah, he's got a band, and you know, he has his own management, and they do their own thing, and he's, you know, there has to be this. What I call full-blooded independence, because, you know, you've got to do it yourself, and he's very much that way. So, he's in London.
I saw, there's a picture of him, of course, in the book with a guitar, so I assumed he took up music, but none of your daughters got into the music biz or have a musical interest?
No. They're funny, your kids, because, you know, like, they didn't really see it when we were younger. They saw it when we were older. And they don't judge it so much by all of the bling that goes on. They judge it by the effect it has on you. So two of my kids are quite into my youngest. She's very into the whole stage, screen, model, acting bit. And two of my kids are like, no, you know what? It looks like a right shitty old business, Dad. And one of my daughters, she's got the voice of an angel, but she just looks, she's very smart, and she's like got a lawyer's mind, and she looks at it and goes, it's hard, my brother's, it's hard work for him, he's been trying for years to get a deal. And she said, and you? She said, it kills you half the time, the music business. And so, you know, that you wonder what they're looking at, and they're looking at how it affects you, and then they make judgments. And that's actually quite cool, because they're benefiting in some way positively from your experiences, and in another way positively because they've seen the pitfalls and have decided it's not for them. But they didn't see it when they weren't even born, really, when we did it first time. So it was all a bit of a, you know,
one of the things you talked about in the book, and I think it's quite poignant, after the birth of your son Andy, your wife became very ill. Tell us a little bit about that time.
Well, after this was 1984, right around Wild Boy, and the postpartum psychosis, which is the extreme sort of one in a million. I think I saw Gwyneth Paltrow on Oprah talking about it the other day. It seems to now, but 20 years ago, 25 years ago, it was very, very unheard, well, unrecognized, and it's a life-threatening illness. The extreme bottom of what you experience in life, which is the person that you love dearly, who you've just had your first child with, are, you know, on death's doorstep, and you're top of the charts. And, you know, it's the most surreal situation, because you can't make any of it calm down. You can't go, hey, can't be there today because we're number one. And you can't go, come on, snap out of it, let's get going, you know, you'll be okay, because it's such a very, very deep, difficult disease once, you know, once it kicks in. And it's a little bit more recognized now, but it was very, very difficult to you know, when you're observing somebody when they're in pain, you know, you're not in pain, but the watching and the helplessness that you have amidst all of this crazy, hedonistic, you know, supercharged, fantastically successful life. And that's, you know, probably the first lesson I ever had about, you know, hold on to your hat, because...
Well, it, you know, right now, you mentioned it, and postpartum depression has become a news item. You know, Brooke Shields made the news, Tom Cruise
was criticizing
her. But this was even more than that. This was a psychosis. You mentioned that in pictures she would be bright-eyed and beautiful, and then you'd see in other pictures after that where her eyes were dead. But the book is interesting. You talk about what they did and how they made her better, and the ending was a good one.
Yeah, the lesson is the depths of depression, you can still come out on top in life. And, you know, later in life, I actually had to, you know, take a step back and deal with things myself in, you know, in a much less severe way. But they told my wife and me never to have children again, and she could never have any more children, and then she may as well get sterilized.
Mm.
It was that severe. And you're sitting going, you know what, dude? I don't believe you. And consequently, she, out of her own, you know, kind of strength of character, went and found treatments which were very successful. Unfortunately, the doctor that did it has passed on, but it worked, and eventually everything came back to, you know, to just what the normal fullness of life should be for a girl having babies. Just a normal experience taken away from any woman, and that bit afterwards. I know how painful that is, because it's, you know, and it's the sort of thing that I think, you know, when you have those experiences in a relationship, that's what tests it, and it makes you stronger, and you survive things in a different way. So
we're talking with.
Not because of anything I did, but because, you know, we have a family, and my wife managed to find a way through. And, you know, I guess in one sense, that's why you value your family. Perhaps sometimes it's difficult to sort of explain to people how you were told one day that you couldn't have one.
Yeah. Well, the things came out well for you. You stuck with your guns, and you and Tracy end up with four. It's wonderful. The book, by the way, is called Andy Taylor, Wild Boy, My Life in Duran Duran. It says that you live in Ibiza. I'm not familiar about that. Where is that, and what is it?
It's a Mediterranean island just off the coast of Valencia, Spain.
Wow.
A bit like the Turks and Caicos without the hurricanes.
Very nice. Sounds like paradise.
It's a beautiful place. It's a big musical sort of reclusive heritage. Pink Floyd wrote and recorded some of their first album out here in the late 60s. Very kind of hippie music culture. And I've got a recording studio here which I use for the creative bit. And, you know, and that's very nice. And the Mediterranean diet's very good for you.
There you go. Well, now, what have you been working on and besides the book? Are you doing some music? Are you still writing?
Yeah. Well, the day-to-day is always, you're always going to have some sort of band on the books, whether it's your own or somebody else's. And I've got a band project which I've been working on. But then, you know, it would be abnormal not to. And there's one other artist I'm working with who's just one of those people that makes you want to keep doing it. So, and I plan to spend time in the States because, quite frankly, it's the only place left where you can really go and do it now, because the music business is so split up and fractured. But America's still, you know, and it's still very kind to us. I mean, you know, I'm 47, and, it's that one thing on your teenage wish list that you didn't put on. When I get nearly 50, someone's still going to give a damn.
Hmm.
You know, and that thing kind of really makes me sit up every day now and go, you know, you come from a part of the business, a time in the business where you actually could get fans, and it's much, much more difficult to promote anything now, particularly if you're a young artist. So, I'm going to spend time in America and start playing live again. And
Andy, we talked a little bit about the MTV real quickly here because I know we're running out of time. What do you think about the impact that the World Wide Web has had, the Internet, in terms of promotion, in terms of selling CDs, and in terms of illegal downloads?
What do you think about it? It's had no impact on selling anything because no one's been successful on the Internet because of the Internet. And the only people that have success on the Internet are bands that have already got a sales base. So it actually hasn't done anything for anybody.
Well, some people become YouTube sensations and then they start selling stuff.
That's cool. Yeah. Now, it's great being able to access music, sit in the studio and go into iTunes and go, oh, you know that old Faces song? Let's have a listen to that and see if you can nick something from it. I love the access, the on-demand. But in terms of my business, done absolutely nothing for it. Because the record companies have got no money. No, they're not making any more superstars. And the only people that are making any money out of the Internet are people like, you know, Nine Inch Nails, which is cool, Radiohead, and people who've already got a sales base.
Yeah.
So until the Internet actually makes a star, it's absolutely useless to the music business. And no one makes any money off iTunes. I think everyone understands that. I mean, you know, selling a unit of one where they keep 40% of the deal is a joke.
I was going to link you up to DuranDuran.com, but I assume you must have your own address.
At the moment, I'm just redoing everything with a new site, and because, you know, MySpace is limited, and they get hacked, and you know.
Yeah.
I'm just setting up a whole new, fairly interesting website that I can do a little bit more with than just kind of, you know, flog stuff. I really think that the Nine Inch Nail model is an excellent thing for kids who want to be creative and adults who want to stay creative. With it down to the free downloading for mixing and stuff, and I'm looking at all of that aspect, you know, even thinking of re-recording Duran songs with new parts.
Oh, wow.
So, because it's, I don't know if you've been to Nine Inch Nails, but it's an amazing concept, and it's kind of file sharing to the ultimate, and it's completely invented a whole new music traffic that didn't, you know, and those are the things that are interesting about it. But, you know, to try and kind of transfer the distribution of music from a plastic piece of CD to an icon on a screen and still expect to get paid the same for the icon is a bit dumb, really, when you think about it. That icon's worth $3.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, the physical ownership of things and that. And, I mean, I love the Internet, but I don't, as of yet, everyone's just trying to follow the old model and flog stuff. No one's come up with a new deal yet. And if it was going to be the rail companies, I guess they'd have done it.
So Andy Taylor's going to come up with another unique thing on the Internet.
I don't know. It's like Google, isn't it? No one predicted Google.
Yep.
No one's going to predict what does, perhaps for music, what the old distribution system did. It'll just, something will happen. It'd probably be some young kid, but we can't, what can't and what doesn't work is this translation of old distribution into new distribution. I mean, think about it. EMI Records is worth less now than it was 25 years ago as a company.
Yeah.
So all the other businesses, well, apart from the fact that the world's bankrupt unless they've sorted out, all the other businesses in the world are going up, and the music business is the only one that's going down.
Yeah.
What a bunch of geniuses, eh?
Well, this thing, I think there's also one other thing that you got to understand, at least in my opinion. When you look at the music of the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and then you compare it to what's out there now.
Investment in artists.
It seems to me, yeah, that there was a lot better stuff going up years ago than there is now.
No, they invest in performers and not artists.
Yeah, you're right.
A&R doesn't take a chance. It takes the easy road out with the performers. And, you know, that doesn't matter who writes the songs. We haven't got time to get that one right, boys. And as soon as you try to go to that model creatively, no names, but, you know, as soon as you try to go to this new creative model where you mush all these celebrities together and hope you can all get on the VIP list in a club, you're screwed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, again, I suppose, you know, those are the things that Rolling Stones still make records that sound like Rolling Stones. And you know what? We still love them for it.
You're right. I'd love to keep talking to you, but we don't have any more time left. Andy Taylor from Duran Duran. The book is called Wild Boy, and it's available right now all over the place from Grand Central Publishing. Andy, it was a pleasure for me to talk to you, and continued success in the music world.
Yeah, good to talk to you.
Take care.
Enjoyed it. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye.